market, the clients are beginning to understand now that there's a consequence for using this product, and they're not using it. You're going to have to move on to something else. If your business was primarily applying perms, you better find something else to do. But we're not pursuing salon owners. And so now off to the second question. What could you expect to receive?
Well, the follow-up. Some women aren't doing what their due diligence, I understand, in terms of following up. They get a call, then they're enrolled, and then they don't.
We are sending forms to you. Now, some folks aren't real good about using email. We are sending forms to you with a product called DocuSign. It's pretty common nowadays. I mean, in the pandemic, everybody's kind of learned that they can sign forms on their phone or tablet.
Right.
And we are sending those. You have to check your emails because if you've contacted us, we've emailed you the forms. It may be in your spam folder, your junk folder, or your regular folder. You've got to be able to find this document and sign it, and you get it back to us. If you have real trouble doing that, you can come to the office and sign them in person. It's not a problem, but it's a lot easier to do this over the on your phone or tablet, and it's sitting in your mailbox. Once you've signed those forms, they come back to us, and we begin to work immediately. We're gathering up the medical records from your gynecologist, your oncologist, your family doctor. It takes time. 3 months to 6 months is the average that we need to gather these medical records. So there's not going to be a lot happening in the very beginning of your claim. We're gathering the medical records, but your claim, you've told the statute. Your claim is now in the books.
So be patient.
And yes, yeah, be patient. And then what happens is at the end, there's going to be a resolution. There will be cases that will actually go to trial, but they will be a small, small percentage of the total cases. Your case will be examined on a case-by-case basis, and your damages will be evaluated and valued. And the settlements that will come at the conclusion of this matter will be significant. It depends. It again on the damages. If you have had cancer and you've gone through rounds and rounds of chemo and you've lost your hair and you've gone close to the doors of death and you've beat it, your damages are going to be substantial. And if you've got fibroid tumors that have plagued you your entire life, if you've ended up having a hysterectomy, and if you've not been able to have children because of this, your damages are going to be substantial.
I think that's pretty damaging, those what you're talking about. Surgeries?
Yes.
All right, come on.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there are not a lot of firms that are handling the hysterectomy claims.
Is that right?
There are some firms who are only going to handle the cancer cases.
Okay.
If you or a family member have sustained any of the injuries we've talked about, you must give us a call immediately, 215-227-2727. If you know someone who has sustained these damages, pass the information on to your friends and family members and tell them to give us a call. There's no costs involved in this whatsoever. We obtain the medical records. We invest all of the money in making your case a case. All you need to do is give us a call, share some information, sign the papers, and we'll take care of it from there.
Tactic?
Yep.
Get
your justice. Have you gotten the property rights to that phrase?
Tactic? Did you get it yet?
No, get it now.
Getting it now.
All right.
Dean's going to take it.
Dean, take it.
Yeah. Dean taking it.
No, it's yours.
All right. We give it to you. We bequeath it to you.
All right. Let's move on. We have the most special guest Court Radio ever has. Probably more beloved on Court Radio than me, Manuel, and Eric together.
Yes, he's the guy.
He is that dude.
Everybody loves him. You better call Saul.
the blueprint.
A very good morning to our radio listening audience.
Let me say as a matter of fact, I just started You Better Call Saul.
Stop.
What is it with you, man?
I like to watch a show after it's kind of, you know, done, and I can do it at my will. I like to control how much. I do not want to wait. I'm an addict. I don't want to wait a week for a show.
All right, but
or, God
always,
forbid, from one season to the next, six months.
I feel you there. But there's no void. You're always watching something. There's no void where there's nothing that's captured your viewing.
Yes, well, lately, since pandemic, yes.
Right.
I'm always trying to find something to pass
but
the time.
But you're like how many years behind with
six?
Saul?
Six.
Wow.
Six or seven. He is fantastic.
Yeah.
So smart.
Yeah.
So cunning.
Did you watch Breaking Bad?
Of course, yes.
Of course. So,
and I watched that as it folded out.
So comparing the two, which is the better series?
I don't know. A Better Saul calls. It might be better.
Okay.
It might be better. I don't know. But I'll probably go through Better Call Saul and then flip back to Breaking Bad for a second show.
Right. Makes sense. Okay.
Yeah. I understand that the characters in Breaking Bad end up in the final episode of Better Call Saul.
Right.
To kind of meld those two.
You got the mess. So you understand what's coming.
Yes, yes, yes. All right, let's get to the real Saul here.
Absolutely.
If Saul's on the show, folks, we're talking about elder law. We're talking about, I'm not going to use the G word. We're talking about elder law, the E word. You know, since Trump, he's got a lot of those. The F word, the B word. We're going to talk about the E word today, elder law.
Except it's not just limited to the E word, because you've got middle America and young America as a result of COVID expressing a serious interest in having their paperwork in order.
You know what? Saul makes a good point. It is not just the E word. God willing, you'll only need it once you get to the E word, but you should have it in place when you're young.
Absolutely. There's a time and a place. You are correct.
All right. Now, before we even jump into a topic on this multifaceted topic. I mean, we can go on for hours on this, but we're only limited to an hour. We've got a caller immediately. Line one for Saul. Judy from Germantown.
Jute.
Good morning. I have a quick question for Saul. I own a property jointly with my mother, and I'm concerned about debt that she may leave and still being able to retain the house. If we do, can you tell me if a trust will help protect us or how we can go about doing that? And is that something your office can assist me with?
What?
And secondarily, I sent Philly Lawyer an email requesting help. The Attorney General's office said that I would repair handling an issue, but they suggested that I retain a private attorney for the issues. Another issue of actually suing the company, they said I need to consult a private attorney. And, Dean, I sent you an email regarding that. So I'm hoping you'll be able to look at it and tell me if that's something you're interested in and if I can retain you.
All right.
Thank you, and I'll respond.
Judy, you bring up one point before Saul jumps in on the trust question. You just said something which is wrong, and maybe it was a slip of the tongue, but I want to clarify it. There are, you know, these imposters. They jumped onto my brand early on, right? And one of them is Philly Lawyer. Philly Lawyer. Well, I don't know anything about Philly Lawyer. I am, always have been, my Philly Lawyer. And unless you put that my in front, you're not getting to me. So I have had so many clients who have complained about Philly Lawyer, saying they're not handling my case, then they don't call me back. Well, let me tell you something. You're not dealing with me. You're dealing with an imposter. Philly Lawyer is not my Philly Lawyer.
No, it's not.
I am part of the family. And if you don't put the my in front of Philly, you're not getting Dean.
You're getting a hack. Straight up
so,
hack.
So, Fugazi. Judy, just in case it wasn't a slip of the tongue when you said you emailed Philly Lawyer, you make sure you send it to dean@myphillylawyer.com and tell all your friends.
That's exactly where I sent it to, dean@myphillylawyer.com.
Then I'm going to see it. Judy, I will see it. I'm going to, what's your email, Judy, so I can look for it?
It's @globalifg.net.
All right. All right. I'm going to look for you as soon as I get off the air, Judy. Stand by. Saul's going to talk to you about the trust.
Okay.
Thank you. Have a good day, guys.
Judy, bye-bye. So let me...
Judy, hold on, Judy. Hold on. Saul's got a question for you.
Okay, so let me comment on the issue that you raise, which happens to be an issue that has also cropped up in our office several times in the last couple months. And it's a very important issue, so I'm hoping our listeners pay close attention. When you talk about the ownership of real estate and there's two names on the deed, there is some very specific legal language that we look for which controls ownership of that property should one of the named grantees pass. So when people put two names on the deed, if it's husband and wife and they're identified as husband and wife, that's a unique ownership unto itself. Any relationship other than husband and wife is going to be held in the following. You're either going to have two names on the deed as tenants in common, or you're going to have two names on the deed as joint tenants with the right of survivorship. That is a very, very important distinction. With the presence of the word survivorship, if you have two names on the deed, should one pass, the survivor will automatically become the owner of 100% of that real estate. If the ownership is as tenants in common, that simply means that each named individual on that deed owns 50%. And should they pass, that 50% will go to the immediate family members of that named individual. So survivorship language is key. So in order for me to answer your question, I would need to see the document that you're referring to, because I never am comfortable offering a legal opinion on a document that I myself do not read. So I'm not answering your question without the benefit of the language in the deed that you're referring to.
Are you there still?
Yep.
Mine is joint survivorship, but I'm concerned about debts that she may leave and me losing the property to have to pay off her debt.
Well,
is that a possibility with the home?
If she is a joint owner and she incurs debt, then any creditor, any judgment creditor, can look for any assets she may have while she's alive, of course, and therefore her ownership in the real estate could be vulnerable to a judgment creditor.
Just the real estate, not any assets you own individually, but the joint ownership of that real estate could be affected.
Trust protect it?
Well, here's the interesting thing about a trust, and that's a very common inquiry. What the public doesn't realize is when you put an asset into trust, you're giving up ownership. So, for example, on this property, if you had a mortgage on the property, you could not transfer ownership without getting written permission from the mortgage company. If you want to give up ownership, one, you have to incur the cost of a trust, creating a trust, which is not inexpensive. Then you have to create a new deed, and the deed has to transfer ownership of the property out of your name and mother's name and transfer it into the trust, which is an additional expense. Keep in mind, you no longer own it. If mother has some interest in tax breaks, because of her age, you lose those tax breaks because she's no longer an owner. The trust is the owner. So the other choice you might have, the other choice you might consider, is why don't we do a deed and have mother transfer her joint interest to you now?
Okay.
Just outright transfer it to you now, mm-hmm. and that takes it out of her name and any possible liens that she may incur for herself.
Okay. But, all right, I'll give your office a call on Monday because I think that might be what we need to proceed with doing.
All right, Judy. Thanks for giving us a call.
Thank you. All right, bye-bye.
Bye now. 215-227-2727. the number for all things legal. So where do we go from here?
Well, some interesting questions were raised with respect to young people and their need for wills. Some interesting questions were raised pertaining to young people and powers of attorney. So as a general rule, the demand for powers of attorney usually comes from emancipated children who are concerned about a mother, an elderly mother, or an elderly father. That is the norm, and that's a wonderful thing because I think COVID has spurred that concern on. If we're blessed with having elderly parents who are reasonably well and they're up in years, there's absolutely no harm in having a discussion with a parent about them giving you a power of attorney, a durable power of attorney, which is broad, it's all-encompassing, it's not limited to finances, it's not limited to medical. It's as if you're stepping into the shoes of a parent and you're assisting them in making decisions, day-to-day decisions.
Can your decisions overrule the decisions of your elderly parent?
The answer is yes. The power of attorney allows you to do that. But when I meet with families and we have this discussion and the parents are very much in control, the conversation basically goes as follows. If you have a power of attorney in place and you would like your child to assist you in making a decision, the power of attorney will allow you to do that. The popularity of the power of attorney is that should there come a time when a parent is not capable of making their own decisions, the agent named in the power of attorney has the legal authority to do that. And in the same breath, you have to be mindful of who you appoint because the document also leads to abuse.
So I know right now I've got young parents in their 30s with young children listening. It's just too soon for them to be thinking about.
It is too soon. If you are blessed with good health, then it's not an issue. But if you succumb to some type of sickness, you may want to start thinking about it. And I receive phone calls sometimes from emancipated children asking about powers of attorney for parents. And my conversation always turns to, has your father been declared mentally incompetent by any of their treating physicians? And if I get the right answer, we can do something. But sometimes they tell me, yes, my mother has advanced Alzheimer's or something like that. And I tell them, if she's not competent, one, she's not permitted to sign a legal document because she can't understand it. And therefore, the only avenue available to that family is to file a petition for the appointment of a guardian, which takes you into the orphans court in Philadelphia. It's a much more convoluted, much longer drawn out, and much more expensive process. So if you have a parent that's on the cusp and they're still capable and want a power of attorney, I certainly encourage all of you to have that conversation with an elderly parent and get that done because it's going to make your life a lot easier.
215-227-2727, 215-227-2727.
All right, let's talk to, we have a caller, let's talk to Alex from Frankfurt on line two. Alex, welcome to Court Radio.
Hey, Dushalom, Mr. Weitzman, Dushalom and the rest of your crew. Peace and blessings.
How are you today? Fine, thank you. I feel so blessed this morning. I am. I am blessed and at peace. So what's on your mind today, Alex?
It is a beautiful day in Zamunda. Yes. Well, what I had on my mind, I work for a transportation company, and we had an accident. I was going eastbound on a one-way street, and some kids on some bikes was going northbound on a one-way street, and they went to go turn westbound on the one-way street I was going eastbound on. Now, mind you, I seen them coming, so the one child was on a Razor scooter, and he turned the corner too sharply, and he fell in front of my vehicle. So I saw him. Right before I saw him, I turned and to get away from him to avoid hitting him. So what happened, the tire caught his foot, and he was crying. But by the time the medics came and everything, you know, he had stopped crying. He seemed okay and everything. And I had a passenger on board which saw the whole thing. So she signed a statement to that fact for my company. But what I long story short, I received paperwork from the attorney, from the parent, suing me. And I'm like, why am I receiving paperwork, you know, this young with the child's name on it versus me? And I'm like, why am I receiving paperwork from this attorney when I had witness, all types of witnesses, you know, stating to the fact that it wasn't my fault?
Okay.
I can't understand that.
All right. I'm going to explain it to you. It's America. And, you know, being sued doesn't mean you're at fault. It means that somebody thinks you're at fault or may be at fault, and they're pursuing a claim. It's only a claim. It doesn't become a judgment or have a financial impact on you until they win that claim. And a lot of times claims are lost. And you seem to have the facts at your fingertips, and you've got witnesses. That's a good start. I presume, Alex, you have insurance.
That's what I was about to ask.
Yes, the company has insurance. Yes, they do.
Okay, so that company's insurance will hire and retain an attorney on your behalf, and that attorney will defend you, and that'll be all free of charge to you. And if there is a judgment, if somehow they do win this case, the insurance company will have to pay the damages. So at this point, you just need to turn it over to them, provide them with the witness information, and they'll do their thing. What you didn't say, and I presume that the intersection, this intersection is controlled by a stop sign or a traffic light.
That is correct. I had the green light.
Okay. So it becomes a factual basis. Who had the green light? And, of course, having a green light, folks, doesn't mean that you have no obligation to stop your vehicle if you see a dangerous condition unfold in front of you. But, again, it goes a long way. Having a green light means that you have the right of way. And presumably the child came through a red light on this razor. And so, again, it doesn't surprise me a claim is being made, but again, with witnesses, a lot of times these claims go away at the claims stage, that if you establish clearly that you were in the right and the other person in the wrong, the lawyer may just drop the claim at some point. But again, it's not your concern. Your concern right now is to turn it over to the company who turns it over to the insurance company. You sit back and wait for everything else to happen. Provide your testimony as you are a witness as well. You're a party, but you're also a witness, and your witness is a witness, and all should be well, Alex.
And one more thing. We do have drive cams in our vehicles to protect us.
Good.
Against things just that, because like I said, the witness saw the whole thing, and she, you know, was like, what was the child doing? Because I saw this whole thing happening before me, and I slowed my vehicle down.
Yep.
And
it sounds like you did everything you could possibly do to avoid this accident. Sit tight, just relax. But with the witness and the dash cam, I think this is going to end well for you. Alex, thanks for calling Court Radio, sir.
Thank you, sir. All of you have a marvelous day.
Thanks to you as well. 215-227-2727. Unfortunately, we're at the half hour. Folks, just take a quick 2-minute break. We'll be back after these sponsored announcements. I'm Dean Weitzman. If you have a history of using chemical hair straighteners and have been diagnosed with uterine or endometrial cancer, call My Philly Lawyer now at 215-227-2727. Frequent use of chemical hair relaxers can double the risk of uterine and endometrial cancer. If you've been affected, we will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
When we say winning matters most, we mean it. My Philly Lawyer just helped secure an $80 million victory for a client suffering from a defective medical product. Whether it's a motor vehicle, workplace, or medical malpractice injury, My Philly Lawyer gets results.
If you've been injured and want aggressive, thoughtful, thorough representation, call My Philly Lawyer first.
Philly's legal champions. 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer. When winning matters most.
I grew up here, went to school here, raised my kids here. I know Philly, and Philly knows me. I started My Philly Lawyer because if you've been injured, your lawyer matters, and choosing someone local matters. It matters to the insurance company, it matters to the jury, and most importantly, your lawyer matters when it comes to getting results. If you've been injured, call us now, 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
I'm Dean Weitzman. If you have a history of using chemical hair straighteners and have been diagnosed with uterine or endometrial cancer, call My Philly Lawyer now at 215-227-2727. Frequent use of chemical hair relaxers can double the risk of uterine and endometrial cancer. If you've been affected, we will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
We're back. Welcome back to Court Radio, folks. I'm Dean Weitzman, your host, every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. If you've got a legal issue, we've got the answer. 215-227-2727. And we've got callers lined up. If you want to get your question asked, you better give us a call soon.
I just wanted to ask, piggyback on the last caller, are you seeing more accidents with razors and scooters and e-bikes and bicycles and delivery bikes? Because I live where everyone's ordering. You see it all the time now. I got to think there are a lot of accidents with these little types of vehicles.
Actually, as recently as yesterday, I was contacted about an accident in Brooklyn. A delivery person was in a bike lane. A car was stopped in the bike lane. The delivery driver attempts to bike out of the bike lane to get, you know, so that he gets around the stopped vehicle when a box truck was coming in the travel lane, struck him, ran over him, and unfortunately he died. It's far too common.
It's occurring more and more now.
Absolutely.
Isn't it? Yeah.
And folks need to be more conscious of bikes, and bikers need to be very safe as well. I mean, you'll see in Center City sometimes they're weaving in and out and in and out of traffic.
They run lights.
Yes. And so bikes have an obligation to follow the rules of the road just like cars.
Thank you.
They have to travel in the same direction of cars. They have to stop at traffic lights just like cars, et cetera, et cetera. A 4,000-pound car needs to be extra mindful of the bicyclists as well.
And just an FYI, your favorite PPA,
I know,
are very much enforcing ticketing cars in the bike lane.
Yeah. Good.
For this reason.
Double parking. People double park at night because they have no place else to park. And some of these are now these new bike lines that you're going to have to get used to this, folks. There are bike lanes now. What's confusing, folks, are there are lanes that folks have been used to driving in that now have a bike designation. They don't know, are they still allowed to drive in that lane? Because it's not a skinny one. It's still as big as it was, but it has a biker insignia in it.
Right.
And people are confused. Does that mean I can't go in there? Or what does that mean exactly?
Yeah, I don't know. I would presume if the lane was big enough for a car to fit,
right,
I would presume that it's a joint use lane.
You have to share.
Yeah, a share.
Both need to be.
Yeah, I thought if it has the bicycle lane.
You know what? We have to get in touch with the Philadelphia police and bring them on to answer that question.
We got a guy.
All right, let's get that guy on here.
We got it.
In the meantime, I have a question that was asked, and we're going to start doing this at the top of the half hour. We are going to have our question of the week.
Oh.
This was an emailed question from a listener this week. Hi, I was curious about in what case or need can you sue someone? I got into a car wreck about a week ago that was not my fault. No injuries. So the car that is getting salvaged is a 2002 Camry, and the car in question is the car I use because it's all I could afford. Most of the time, car wrecks that end up being not their fault in some way help them buy new cars. Not for me. I'm only getting $3,000 back, and as of right now, I don't have any other options for a car. I just wanted to know if this is reason to think of suing someone. I never really thought about it till I explained it to a friend. She basically said the wreck is leaving me jobless with no options. Here is Allison. Here is the answer.
Okay.
If you're being paid the fair market value for your car, that is all the defendant has to do. What the consequences are of the loss of that car is not valid. It is not something that you can be compensated for. As soon as they hand you a check for the fair market value of your car, they're done, and you have to take that check and do the best you can to find a replacement vehicle. And if you can't find a replacement vehicle, then you probably didn't get paid the fair market value. Because the way they obtain fair market value is they look at what cars are selling for, where they should be able to find 2002 Camrys in the marketplace that are selling for $3,000. If they're selling for $4,000, then you didn't get paid enough.
So it's based on what they're selling and not necessarily just the blue book value?
Well, one way to determine the blue book value is through active sales for the car.
Gotcha. There's a concept. Hmm. There's a concept called diminution of value.
Diminution of value.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And people don't think about that.
And you bring up an excellent point. And that was one that I was going to talk about. And I appreciate the segue, right, because diminution in value is a damage that you could incur even if you're paid the repair price of your car.
So, I mean, that's an issue that struck very close to home when one of my sons had a relatively new Pathfinder parked on Ridge Avenue that was rear-ended by a tractor trailer, causing major, major damage to the vehicle. And so they were trying to explain to me what the fair value of the vehicle was, but I looked back to the actual condition of the vehicle prior to the accident, and then we went fast forward and we calculated the diminution of value, and the trucking company issued its own check for the diminution of value on top of the insurance company check for the trucking company.
Now, understand, usually diminution in value occurs when they repair your car. So let's say
it was a total.
Okay. So that's really unusual, but that's only because it's Saul's kid. You know, he went the extra mile for him.
Of course. That costs Saul.
But let me explain where diminution in value generally comes up. You own, what did you say it was?
It was a 2-year-old Pathfinder.
All right. So it's not like a Mercedes or a BMW. It's a Pathfinder. And maybe it cost the kid $50,000 for the Pathfinder. The car sustains $20,000 in damage. The company pays the $20,000, and the car is repaired like new. Damages? Do you have any? Yes. Because if you took that car the very next day after you got it back from the body shop, and it was shiny and looked all back to normal, and you brought it into your local Mitsubishi or whatever Pathfinder is,
Nissan.
You bring it into your Nissan dealer and you trade it in. And they say, was this car in an accident? And you go,
check the Carfax.
Yeah, yeah. And the Carfax shows that the car had $20,000 in damage. Mm. Well, they say, we would have given you $40,000 for this car, but because it was an accident, it's only worth $35,000 today. You lost $5,000 in value, even though the car looks like it's brand new. You brought it right back to its original specs. But simply because it was in an accident, it has reduced value. Nobody gets paid for that $5,000. You lost it. You're eating it. Mm. Only if you come to my Philly lawyer.
My Philly lawyer.
And you talk to Saul. No, I'm meeting with an expert this week.
Right.
His whole job is to determine the diminution in value.
Stop you right there. I think if there's going to be a letter of the week, there needs to be a word or term of the day. And that's a perfect one.
If you've been in a serious car accident and have had property damage, this is a common loss that you will incur. Mm. If you trade your car in or sell your car, you will get less for it as if there is a Carfax out there with that accident on it. Period. Hard stop. And that loss in value needs to be paid to you at the same time that they repair your car. And if you're represented by counsel, there are experts who can determine that loss, and the insurance companies are recognizing it, as Saul has made them do, and that needs to be a part of your whole claim. However, with Allison, we weren't talking about diminution in value. We were talking about subsequent losses, like I couldn't work because I didn't have a car.
Right.
And they presume if they gave you enough for your car that you can go out into the marketplace and get a car. And Allison,
of similar value,
exactly. And Allison, and some people are upside down on a car. You buy a car, you have a note, and you owe more than the car is worth.
Yeah. Then that's gap insurance.
If you don't have gap insurance, you're not getting paid for that.
Right.
So a lot of times people come away from an accident feeling unfulfilled. They're not made whole. But she started the story with, I got no injuries. Well, if you've got no injuries, then you've got no other claim, and you probably aren't going to be represented by any attorneys because there's nothing there for them to represent you on. There's no way to make money for you or for them, and unfortunately, you fall into the cracks.
All right.
That's the end of that. We've got so many calls, Saul, I don't even know where to begin. Let's see. Let's talk to Janie, line two.
Hello, this is Jamie.
Hi, Janie.
How are you?
Good. What's your story?
Well, I wanted to know, what's the legalities for a commitment? Like, if somebody goes into the emergency room and they have an eval, and then they're admitted to the hospital, how does that work, an elderly person?
So what you're saying is that they're being committed to the hospital against their will. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. So there are statutes that apply to this that you have to be a danger to yourself or others, and there can be a 72-hour commitment, and then there needs to be legal papers filed with the court to extend that beyond 72 hours.
It's a short range period, and if family objects, they have other avenues they can pursue to protect an elderly parent.
Yeah, I mean, you could retain counsel if you felt like the elderly parent was being held without due cause. But for the first 72 hours, it could be a doctor who signs off on the commitment. But anything beyond that would require a court action.
Okay, so that means that maybe a family member or someone can request the court action?
If there's a power of attorney, life would be a lot simpler.
Ah, that's what it is. Okay.
Thank you, Jamie. Okay. Have a great Saturday.
And thank you so much, and have a beautiful one as well.
Okay, line five, we have Sean, a woman, for Saul. Hi, Sean.
Hi, good morning, Dean. Good morning, Saul.
Good morning.
I wanted to talk about a brokerage account that was left to me by my uncle to pay for his final expenses. So all the documents are signed, and they were approved by the company. And then my uncle passes away, and I went to cash in or obtain the funds from the brokerage account. And after he passed away, the advisor said, oh, I'm sorry to give you bad news, but some of the product inside the brokerage account was an annuity, and you would have needed different forms for that. My uncle and I met with this person over and over again and assured us that all the forms we signed for this very well-known company would be enough. And I guess he went to check to see what I needed to collect. And he said, I'm sorry, the annuity within the product needed another form. I'm sorry, you can't have it.
So here's where I see an issue here. Number one, you didn't have counsel. Number two, you didn't have any testamentary devices. So if you had had a will between, if your uncle had had a will and he left you those various accounts in the will, then that would have superseded any requirements from the company. But you didn't have, I assume, you didn't have representation. You relied upon the broker. You may have a claim against the broker under the broker's own what's that called? Errors and omissions, E&O insurance. So the broker gave you advice, which was bad advice. He has sort of like malpractice insurance. It's called errors and omissions insurance. And you may be able to bring a claim against the broker who goes, oops, I made a mistake. So that's something you should pursue if the value of the account or that annuity is sufficient.
I mean, part of the confusion is if the brokerage account names you as the beneficiary of the assets in that estate, which would include an annuity, there's something not consistent that makes any sense. Keep in mind, did your uncle also leave a will? Were there other assets besides the brokerage account?
There were, and there is an administrator, but what they want to do is 90% was in the annuity, and they want me to take the 10% that they said that their forms covered. So they're willing to give me 10% out of the 100%, but not the annuity. So they made a mistake, and they said their forms only cover everything in that brokerage account but the annuity.
Well, the confusion is one would have to become very familiar with these documents in order to be able to intelligently explain to you what your rights are. And we here, of course, are at a disadvantage because we have questions to which we don't have answers. The other thing is if it's part of the assets of the estate, keep in mind that the value of the brokerage account will trigger an inheritance tax. And this is an uncle, so you fall into a 15% inheritance tax category, which could be substantial.
One other thing. Would you please repeat the advisor's I guess the insurance he has.
Errors, E-R-R-O-R-S, errors. Errors mm-hmm. and omissions.
Thank you so much for your time.
No, thank you for calling. Great questions. Have a great day. 215-227-2727, the number for all things legal. Let's see here. No. This doesn't say much. Do we have a line one? Teresa on line one for Saul. Oh, Teresa.
Hi, Teresa. Teresa, hung up.
Gone.
But not forgotten.
Gone, but not forgotten. Well, let's just chat for a moment also. I have here some issues relating to common law marriage. I just want to clear up that in Pennsylvania, common law marriage was abrogated. It was no longer allowed. More than 20 years ago.
So if you're alleging common law and that relationship was created when common law was recognized in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania,
then you're still valid.
And you've held yourself out as spouses to each other and to the public, then it's still valid. But what happens today is people decide to live together. One in their own mind creates this fiction that there's a common law relationship, but it doesn't exist in Pennsylvania, so you do not get the benefits.
Yeah, no benefits from common law marriage unless it's a really old, like you're really old. If you're really old and you had a common law marriage and that meant you had a ceremony, you actually had to have a ceremony where people witnessed you getting married together without, you know, any license or anything. But you said to your spouse, I take you as my wife, and she said, I take you as my husband, and that that ceremony was witnessed, and then you begin to hold yourself out as husband and wife, that's a valid common law marriage if it predates when it was abrogated.
You're right. The understanding is that your circle of friends or the public, when they look at you, it's a husband and wife relationship because that's your reputation within that community.
But if that did not happen, you have no common law marriage. If it's a recent relationship in the last 20 so years, you don't have a common law marriage. No. And in Jersey and Delaware, no common law marriage. In fact, Jersey abrogated it in 1939. So you can't even possibly tell me your common law marriage back that far. If you know, no way. No, not happening. Folks, we got to take a quick break. We'll be back in 2 minutes. You got calls. Keep them coming.
I'm Dean Weitzman. If you have a history of using chemical hair straighteners and have been diagnosed with uterine or endometrial cancer, call My Philly Lawyer now at 215-227-2727. Frequent use of chemical hair relaxers can double the risk of uterine and endometrial cancer. If you've been affected, we will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
When we say winning matters most, we mean it. My Philly Lawyer just helped secure an $80 million victory for a client suffering from a defective medical product. Whether it's a motor vehicle, workplace, or medical malpractice injury, My Philly Lawyer gets results.
If you've been injured and want aggressive, thoughtful, thorough representation, call My Philly Lawyer first.
Philly's legal champions. 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer. When winning matters most.
I grew up here, went to school here, raised my kids here. I know Philly, and Philly knows me. I started My Philly Lawyer because if you've been injured, your lawyer matters, and choosing someone local matters. It matters to the insurance company, it matters to the jury, and most importantly, your lawyer matters when it comes to getting results. If you've been injured, call us now, 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
I'm Dean Weitzman. If you have a history of using chemical hair straighteners and have been diagnosed with uterine or endometrial cancer, call My Philly Lawyer now at 215-227-2727. Frequent use of chemical hair relaxers can double the risk of uterine and endometrial cancer. If you've been affected, we will fight for you. Call 215-227-2727. My Philly Lawyer, when winning matters most.
Need more legal answers? Here's more Court Radio with your host, Dean Weitzman.
Yes. Welcome back. I'm Dean Weitzman, your host every Saturday morning at Court Radio, where we tackle the tough legal issues of the day. And I'm joined today with my friend and partner, Saul L. Langsome.
Good morning, everybody.
Saul is our specialist, our resident specialist in elder law. But you don't have to be an elder to have some elder law needs.
No, young people need them just as much.
Maybe more, because they got more money than the old people do.
Who says that?
Let's talk to Kamira on line three. Good morning. Kamira? Oh, Kamira.
We have an idea of why she was calling, so if she's not on the line, we may.
All right, go for it. So Kamira lives in a family member's house, and she's being put out.
Okay, so a common occurrence, here's a common telephone call. A child moves in with an elderly mother or a child moves in with an elderly grandmother to take care of their needs because they're sickly. At some point, the mother or the grandmother passes away, but during the many, many years, the mother or the grandmother promised this child, you're going to own this house when I leave. Unfortunately, they never get around to doing the paperwork, and the property still remains in mother's name or grandmother's name. So depending on who the heirs are, let's assume it's the mother's name. If there are 2, 3, 4 children, not uncommon, you've got the daughter living in the house saying, mother promised me this house. I sacrificed the last 10 years of my life, and it's my house. And the siblings say, no, it's not your house because the property was not legally left to her. When mother passed away, we all survived mother. We have an equal interest in her house. The house is worth, hypothetically, $100,000. There are four of us. Each of our shares is worth $25,000. Pay us our $25,000, and we'll sign over our interest to you in a deed. This happens every day of the week, listeners, every day of the week. And unless your name is on the deed, you have no greater interest than your siblings.
And out you go. And if they have to get you, evicted, there's not an eviction.
No, it's not an eviction. It's a nightmarish process called an ejectment. You have to go through the Court of Common Pleas to eject these people, which is time-consuming.
Money.
Expensive.
Yeah, there. That's what I was looking for. Money, baby. It could cost thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars to eject somebody. And that's why you don't let them in the first place. Block the doors.
But once they're in, though.
Once they're in, it's tough to get them out.
Who pays for the ejectment?
Yeah.
Those who want the person out. So the three siblings who are saying, pay us our money, they got to invest money to get money, and that's the bottom line.
That's an ugly occurrence if you're all in the same house.
It's extremely ugly, and eventually, if an attorney is hired, the attorney will file a complaint with the court asking for a court order to sell the house. And you will get the court order under the circumstances I've shared with you. And it becomes even uglier because then you have to eject the family member and eventually get the realtor involved to sell the property and distribute the proceeds.
Okay. I got an email from Lawrence Jackson. And, Mr. Jackson, I just want to let you know that I got your email. I read your email. And I will make sure somebody handles it. By Monday at the latest.
That will
get you into the hands of somebody who might be able to help you with your problem. So I see every email in real time they come in.
Yes, he does.
and that's that. All right. Anything else? Any last words before we go?
The Kentucky Derby today. Mint juleps abound today.
Oh, you know, there's
the greatest horse of all time, Secretariat, won.
Big problem down in Kentucky.
Well,
a bunch of horses died this week.
Four died, but do you know how
in the race?
Some that were in the race, but four horses passed away this week. They've got problems down there.
Did not know that.
There are eight descendants of Secretariat running in the Kentucky Derby this evening.
Wow!
Eight.
Wow!
Talk about sire. Sire 27 and all, but eight are running.
Wow! I think he's competing with me.
I'm not.
Woo! I just want you to all know who's watching, listening now, that I had four shaking heads at one point in the studio. Four, just looking at me with the eyes.
S-H-D-H.
Okay. Sheesh. Sheesh. All right. Anything else? We got
what? Well, there's a coronation, the Kentucky Derby. There's a mayor's race in May 16th.
That's less than 10 days. Come on.
It's too close to call. It really is. It's whoever wants it the most.
But vote.
But please vote.
Yeah.
It really is. This is going to be the first race decided in Philadelphia by gentrifiers, I think.
Yeah.
Mm. The gentrifiers are going to decide this race.
Who do they go for?
It's a toss-up.
Yeah.
No one knows. There's a couple of things going on here. Some folks don't want to say who they're for because they don't want to. If it's not a woman, they don't want the backlash. Why aren't you going to vote for a woman? If it's not the black woman, why aren't you with the black woman? You got to go through all of that. No one knows where these folks are going to go.
Well, it will be determined very shortly. We'll see you folks next Saturday, same time, same place.